Joining me in the studio now for the first part of our new year, Boomer Wright, our state representative, is here, and good to have you in the studio.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here, George Henry, and happy new year to everybody, and hopefully it'll be prosperous for all of those who live in this area.
So I want to talk about some of the new laws that are on the books coming up this year that have just started, but first I want to go back a little bit, and when you were first... I don't know if you were approached or you decided yourself that you wanted to do this and run for the state house. What was the process like going through that? What do you remember about? Was it daunting? Was it how did it feel when you started the process?
Well, it was kind of like drinking from a fire hose, to be very honest. I got a notice on an email that basically said, Boomer, do you know anybody that would like to run for office? And so I looked at my wife, Susan, and I said, what do you think? And she said, what do you mean? I said, what do you think about me running for office? I'm retired. I've got the time. We both are, for that matter. And I've always wanted to do this. And she said, well, I think you're crazy, but I will support you. And I said, well, maybe being a little crazy is prerequisite for the job. Mm-hmm. I contacted the person that had contacted me. And she said, are you kidding? And I said, no. I said, I'm willing. So at that point, that was a Friday night. Monday morning, I get a call from the leaders of the Republican Party in Salem. And asking me if I'm serious, and I said that I am. And so that was Monday. Tuesday, I'm in Salem getting trained.
So you answer the email on Friday, then Tuesday you're in Salem.
Tuesday, I'm in Salem for training. Yeah, it happened that fast. And then working with some other people locally, they asked me if I'd be interested in hiring a person by the name of Jake Pelroy to be my consultant. And he's been amazing in helping me go through this whole process. You know, I've never done anything like this. And so.
Was it kind of a maze for you? It looked like, you know, it's like.
Yeah, it was. You know, you always get in trouble because of things you don't know, not the things you know. So you need people around you. You need a consultant. You need a PR person. You need a media person, those kinds of things, and then my wife, who is my chief of staff, then she runs the office, and the other people who do research for me also. So it's not a one man job. That's impossible to do that. So the idea that the more help I have, the better job I can do.
Cool. Take me through a day. You're driving to Salem for the first day of the legislature. What's a typical day like?
Well. Basically, it starts around 6 o'clock, and I get up, get dressed, do my normal stuff, have breakfast. I usually hit the emails. I get about 100 a day, and then Susan and I both go through them both morning and night. But usually, I'm at work by 7:30. And then I talk to my staff so that they understand what the day is going to be like, if there's any changes or those kinds of things. Then normally if I don't have a committee meeting, which I could have one from like 8 to 10:30, my committees are education, higher education, the lottery, and housing and homelessness. Those are my committees. So, you know, two of them will meet on Monday, Wednesdays. Two of them will meet on Tuesday, Thursdays. And so I'll have usually two a day so far. And so I'll have roughly 5 hours of committee meetings. In between those, I'll have meetings with lobbyists from various organizations, people coming up from Florence or Cuspeda want to visit. We'll have a caucus meeting, usually first thing in the morning, if I don't have committee, and which will organize what's going to happen with the floor, what are the bills coming up. So, like I said, I get up early, hit the emails, we'll have a caucus meeting, then I'll go to committee, then I'll have lunch. Right after lunch, Usually I'll have visitations from people, and then I have committee till about 5:30, and then I hit I meet with my staff again. We go over the day, say what happened, what didn't happen. Are there ideas? Are there ways to do better, you know, what we're doing? And then kind of tentatively plan for the next day. Then Susan and I go home. Usually we'll have dinner. Then we'll spend about an hour till about, you know, 8:30. We'll work on the emails again and making phone calls and those kinds of things. And usually I'm in bed by 9:30.
So when is your wind down time? Now, this is all when the legislature's in, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
my wind down time is usually on the weekends. We usually come home Thursday night, and then Fridays are meetings again with local people, or I'm visiting the Rotary or Lions or, you know, Chamber or whatever. And so that's Fridays, and then Saturdays and Sundays are my downtime to plan for the next week and, you know, sort of, like you say, wind down a little bit.
So on the new laws that are coming into effect, and I'm sure most people know about this, but you can straighten me out if I'm wrong. HB was a House bill. SB is a Senate bill.
Correct.
HB initiates in the House. Senate bill initiates in the Senate.
Correct.
And then they both vote and switch over on that.
Yes.
All right. So what are some of the things that are important to the Florence area that are coming up here?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, there was 2,976 bills that were submitted by the representatives and or organizations. So, George Henry, if you wanted to submit a bill, you could. Usually you go through a representative, but you don't necessarily have to. You could actually go through an agency mm-hmm. if you wanted to. 633 were passed. And that's basically what we're dealing with now. Some went into effect right after the session was over, and then some didn't go into effect until, you know, yesterday before yesterday. Mm-hmm. So one of the bills I wanted to bring forward and talk about was Senate Bill 82A, which has to do with wildlife risk mitigation action. And basically, we all know that wildfires have continued to grow in Oregon, and particularly thinking back to the Labor Day fire in 2020. Senate Bill 82A requires that the insurer to send a notice that contains information on property-specific characteristics and impact of the homeowner mitigation actions related to wildfire risk. So basically what happens is the insurer must inform you of what the requirements for you to protect your house. And then if they decide that they do not want to insure you, that they must give notice of what, and then allow you to mitigate those.
Fix or repair. Yeah.
Fix or repair. Yeah. So that's 82A. House Bill 2982A basically says that if you're in an emergency situation, the governor calls for emergency situation for wildfires, and your home and everything in it is destroyed, then you can get quickly within 30 days coverage of 70%. In other words, you can say, basically, this is 70% of what I believe is what I need to repair. And there's a form that you can sign, and then the insurance company has to deal with that within 30 days. So people have money to deal with to replace the things that they need to have. So,
but is this talking about structure as well as interior of the home?
Or yeah, exterior too. They talk about replacing plants and landscaping and those kinds of things. So essentially, it allows the insured person who experiences total loss to receive 70% payout of personal property coverage without inventory documentation. And if insured person provides documentation to the Department of Consumer and Business Services, that home was furnished and the loss occurred as a direct result or major disaster in a location that was subject to the declaration of a state of the emergency by the governor.
So in other words, not just a regular fire, but if a wildfire is out there and the house is consumed during that conflagration, then everything has to be done within 30 days.
Also, I helped pass a law, that deals with F2 land. And if you happen to have a home already on there and it burns down previous to this bill, you basically couldn't rebuild. And so what the bill says is basically if you do have, a house that is burned down on F2 land, you can replace it.
Now, F2 is farmland?
Yes. Okay. No, it's timber.
Forest land. Okay.
Yeah, forest land.
Okay. I wasn't sure what the F
declaration. Forest land.
Yeah, because I know that there's been some, like, people that would have, like, several hundred acres with a couple of houses on it. You know, they tear one down, and they find out they can't rebuild that second house because of the way the laws are situated.
I'm not sure of the specific qualifications prior to this bill. I know that there had to be a wall left or a sink or a toilet or something to indicate that there was one there. And then in Lane County, in their infinite wisdom, decided that wasn't good enough. So we had to – I know we had a couple of situations here in Lane County in this district, and I decided to go ahead and push legislation so people can rebuild their homes if they need to.
Yeah. Anything else that's new and exciting that's come up over
the
last?
Well, like I said, there are 633 bills.
Yeah,
if I wanted to talk about a few of them, basically, you can fish for less.
Okay. So your licenses for fishing is going to cost you less?
Well, HB 4072 is the price of a one-day angling and a shellfish license, which were reduced basically from $32.50 to $23.
I would imagine that's mainly for people coming into town for a one-day
thing.
Tourists. For tourists.
Yeah, coming in. Yeah. Unfortunately, because of some situations with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and or hatcheries, which I could talk all day on, by the way. Some of our rivers are closed to some of our fishing. So we need to take a better look at what we're doing as far as protecting our fish runs. It's just that simple. And in doing that, hatcheries have to play a major part of it. The research basically tells us that if we were to do nothing from this point forward with hatcheries, that probably we would completely deplete what we already have.
Hmm.
There just aren't enough fish left, native fish, to repopulate.
That's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing.
No.
We have not done well.
And like I said, you could probably talk all day about some of that stuff.
Yeah.
All right, one more. What do we got?
Well,
you got one more?
I think the big one, which wasn't – well, I should say it was passed, in Measure 110. Let's talk about that for a little bit. There's a philosophy in the legislature to a certain extent that says we want to, through compassion and protection, we want to take care of people who have problems with drugs.
Right.
So what has happened is that has worked very well. And right now, Oregon, percentage-wise, has more homeless people with drug addiction than any state in the union. So we've done very well with that philosophy. The problem is that the way to go? 70% of the people in the last poll said Oregon's heading in the wrong direction there. So the concept is, I don't think we should be enabling. I mean, if we had our own children and there was a drug problem, we wouldn't be allowing them to just stay in their room and we provide the drugs. And,
right. Here's a little bit of drugs. I want you to do it at home.
At least you do it at home and you're fine. No, that's enabling.
Yeah.
So we've got to combine compassion, yes, and support, yes, with the concept of getting them clean. I mean, I don't understand why we're not already there. But anyway, we've got to be able to help people get off drugs so they can become a more productive system instead of bleeding the system dry. So I think we need to strongly look at drug courts again and the option of either you know, getting clean or going to jail. And I think that one of the things that we could help communities with would be the idea of correctional facilities, not only housing the people that need help or are sentenced, but that they have a behavior health wing and a substance abuse wing on them. So not only could they help the inmates that are there, but we could help the community too. I think we're doing the opposite direction. We seem to not want to you could say punish if you want to, not want to punish people who either commit crimes or are drugs. And I understand we want to help people, but as we've seen, you know, crime has increased. We have, a homeless problem. We have a drug addiction problem. We have a variety of problems in Oregon, which I believe the idea that seems to come forward is that we want the best from people. The problem is that people are humans, and we have problems. We make bad decisions. We make mistakes, and we have to incorporate that into what we do as far as how we help people. And we're not doing that right now. We seem to want to create a utopia, and we're headed in the wrong direction, obviously.
Now, 110 was pushed strongly by the Democratic portion of the House and Senate.
It was, but it was also voted in by the public.
Right. But are you talking with both sides to see what they think now? I mean, is there an overall sense that we need to go back and revisit this and change it a little bit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There is a committee right now, bipartisan committee, mm-hmm. that basically is looking and deciding what kind of fixes we're going to need for 110. And that will probably be the number one goal for this short session that's going to occur from February and March.
Because I know one of the other things that I've heard from, Lane County sheriffs, from local law enforcement, that is that the inability to keep someone long enough to find out who the bigger supplier might be, you know, to find out where the big drug problems are, because they can't hold them long enough.
Right. Right. Well, we've defunded the police and we've taken our safety officers out of schools and we've done a lot of things that have hampered us getting a better handle on things that 110 was supposed to help. The problem is you can't decrease the sentences for drugs or just let them go, then not have any police to enforce the laws that you eventually want to help fix those things. And so you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have to do is have a concerted effort, which I hope comes out of this committee, that basically says we really want to help people get clean. We really want to help people get a home, because what happens if you have drug addicted people placed in housing without any support? What you have is sick housing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't solve the problem. So as we look at situations with homeless and addiction, we have to understand that we have to provide the services surrounding the person to help them out.
Boomer, I just got to say, that sounds like too much common sense. I don't know. I don't know if we can deal with that or not. Hey, thank you so much. I look forward to February and March, the short legislative session, to see how this 110 goes. It'd be nice to find out how that goes.
One more thing, too. Just remember, on your taxes, you have the right to donate as a single person $50 or $100 as a couple to political people and
yeah.
political parties, and it doesn't cost you a cent.
No,
this comes off your taxes.
Well, and I can use part of my kicker for that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thank God. Thank God for the Republicans and saving the kicker.
Boomer Wright, thank you so much. Next, I'll be speaking with Victoria Moran from Peace Health Riverbend about a stroke support group.